Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
Podcast One presents the Steve Austin Show Classics.
Let's get to part two of my conversation with Jesse, the Body Ventura. And looking back at your career, I'm thinking, unless I'm missing something from the Geigel days and watching, you know, tag teaming with Adrian Adonis in AWA, East-West Connection, and then coming into the WWF as the Body, you never worked babyface.
Never.
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 Here's
once.
The thing,
no, once.
When?
Once.
Beginning?
Portland. Portland.
Okay.
No, what happened there, I worked babyface for maybe a situation baby, heel turn baby. I had left and gone to Hawaii, and so they worked a split between me and Buddy Rose. I was teamed with Buddy Rose then.
Gotcha.
So we did a split between Buddy and I. Buddy was staying, so he stayed heel. I actually switched to babyface for that brief program of a few weeks. And then later when they brought me back, Don flew me in right before I worked for Vern. He flew me in because he had lost Snuka. And he needed someone to go against Rose. So he flew me in for a two-week program to work with Buddy out in Portland right before I started with the AWA.
But then I'm imagining that was an edgy babyface who was making his return based on the storyline as to why you left.
Yeah, totally.
Situational.
Situational all the way. Other than that, never did I work babyface.
Okay.
Never was I brought in as one. Never
right.
did I want to be one because babyfaces couldn't create.
That's interesting.
As a heel, you could create. Babyface, it was mom, apple pie, and the girl back home. You couldn't insult no one. You couldn't be controversial. And there was the old saying, Steve, from before your day, they got to hate you before they can love you.
Yeah, but I've always felt, though, also, as a heel, you have so much freedom. You
yes.
can have egg on your face. You can trip on the bottom rope. Not to say you want to be a comedy act, but you can screw up. And it's okay as that baby. I just didn't. Certainly, you had creativity or freedom, not as much
not
as the
much.
Heel. Okay. The original question was.
Put it this way: I wouldn't have made no money as a baby face.
Okay, but that okay. The original question was your definition of or explanation of how you get over. Because, like you said, we've seen charismatic talkers who really can't work at much have great runs. So, what is the factor? So we glossed over that. But everywhere you go, whether it was running for mayor, whether it was running for governor, you won, and you were the reform or you were the independent.
Yep.
So you can make people like you.
Yeah.
But you're really good at making people hate you.
Hate you.
You don't think you could have had a successful babyface run? Because here's what I think. Superstar Billy Graham was, I think, like the DVD they made for him, was 20 years ahead of his time. Had Vince Sr. had the foresight, like kind of like what Vince McMahon did with me,
yeah.
you know, the double term with Brett, he would have been a monster baby had he let him run, but he drops the title to Backlund. He goes off the reservation, and it was never the same.
Yeah.
Could you have been a babyface because you can get people to vote for you? You
I don't
can
know.
Sell yourself.
I guess.
You make great arguments.
I guess. I never had the opportunity. It never rose.
But to me, my natural instinct was to be a heel.
Me too. I never wanted to be a babyface.
I didn't either.
Never.
I had a great run, but I didn't want it.
Never. I didn't want it. Never was, except for the situational short time with Buddy Rose where we split the team up. And we went our separate ways. But other than that, I was always a villain, always wanted to be one. Didn't want to be mom apple pie and the girl back home because I just felt that wouldn't allow me to create like I wanted
but
to
also,
create.
But also, back in that day, you couldn't have got away with some of the stuff that I was getting away with, which was considered cool. Or I was very abrasive, but I had a very physical work style. But I was talking so much trash, it was entertaining
yeah.
people. Back in that day, it was more traditional. The business
yeah.
hadn't evolved to where it had in, say, 96, 97.
Yeah, Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's like when people say to me, who's the greatest wrestler of all time? I go, you can't answer that.
You can't.
I always remember this year in the Olympics when Bella Karolyi, the gymnastics coach, they started to pin him down on that girl today or Nadia Comaneci. And Bella was great. He said, that's impossible. He said, they're two different eras. You cannot compare two different eras. Both were unique in their own way. And wrestling's the same way. You can't name, like, and say Hulk Hogan's the greatest ever, or Bruno was the greatest ever, or Steve Austin's the greatest ever. They were the greatest for their era.
Right.
And you have to, just like baseball, Henry Aaron, home run king, you know, Babe Ruth, home run king.
Right.
That's their own era of time when they do it. And because one actually beats the other in number, well, there's a lot of things that could cause that. You know, the ball's livelier, it flies farther, who knows, you know, whatever it could be. That's the reason you can never make comparisons between decades to decades, because it's a different time, it's a different place, and different elements in place, and how the business was perceived.
When you first came in WWF, what year was that? Because that was the old man running the territory.
In 81.
81.
Yeah.
What was the difference between, and everything evolves, but still, it was pretty specific. Between the old man and Vince taking it over when his dad sold the territory to him, my question is, what is the difference between the old man and working with Vince?
Well, the difference was, as a promoter, the old man was the smoothest ever. He
I heard that.
You could go into him. I went into him so angry one day, went in, met with Vince Sr., walked out, achieved nothing, and felt good. And and 10 minutes later, I was pissed again because I thought, he schmoozed me. I got nothing, and yet I left like I won. You know? And I didn't. The kid didn't have something he didn't have that the old man had. The old man could, like I said, give you nothing, and you felt he gave you the world.
Right.
And I don't know how he did it. He just, his whole persona and, you know, his gentlemanly, never raised his voice. He was the complete opposite of any. The old man never, ever talked loud. In fact, he always had his own villains that passed on his bad news.
Yeah.
Never came from him. He had other people that would give the bad news out or anything. To side with Vinny, the kid, the old man kept his allegiance to the old promoters and all that stuff.
Right.
When Vinny came along, Vinny was good, and I'll call him Vinny as opposed to Vince Sr., because he had a dream and a vision. And he wanted, maybe he wanted to beat his dad. I don't know. Maybe it was, you know what? I'm going to take this colossal great thing my father created, and I'm going to be Dr. Frankenstein and take it to a level that my dad would never have dreamed it could have gotten to. And he did. I give Vince credit. He's the P.T. Barnum of the generation. And, and one thing about Vince, he'll gamble, too, the year we did football and all that.
I want to ask you.
He'll roll the dice.
Real quick on promoters, though, working with Geigel, Don Owen in Portland,
Ed Francis in Hawaii, Vern Gagne in Minneapolis, and Vince Sr. in New York.
Give me a common thread of all those guys operating, and if you're in there for any kind of period of time, as far as psychology of trying to keep all the boys in a state of everything's cool, because, you know, with the egos and...
The common thread between all of them?
Okay, here's the
They screw line. The boys over. That's the common thread. They all have their own ways. They all have their own techniques, but essentially they're doing the same thing.
But you give it to Vince Sr. for being the smoothest operator.
Oh, he was the smoothest operator. Like I said, Steve, I wish you'd have gotten a chance to work for him.
Yeah.
You'd have walked in so angry over something, and you'd have walked out feeling he solved the whole thing. And then 10 minutes later, you realized he didn't solve anything.
But
he just got me out of the office and got me off my high horse, and he accomplished what he needed to get done.
But I'll give you something, because you didn't deal with him in your later years, because you'd already been through the business and worked and moved on. But Vince Jr., he assumed those qualities because I had many dealings with him, but I was on the same page with him. One time we had a meeting at catering, and it was one of those things where everybody gets together to, you know, put the rally caps on and get the morale up. And anybody have any questions? One particular person stood up and asked a question, and I don't remember the question, but it was so basic. You knew what the answer was going to be. And Vince spun that person around, and just, you could see the cycle going.
Oh, yeah.
And then the person goes, okay, and sits down. And everybody in the room except that person knew that they had got hoodwinked.
Yep.
And they witnessed it firsthand. So I've seen many cases of it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've heard other guys saying same things about going in to see the old man, and all of a sudden, everything's hunky-dory fine.
Oh, yeah.
The door slams. You can't go back. And 5 seconds later, I didn't get anything accomplished.
You know what the greatest compliment I was ever paid?
I've heard this. What was it?
Freddie Blassie.
Yes.
Classy
you
Fred Blassie.
You call your own shots.
Yep. Freddie one day, apparently, when I was at the height of the whole Saturday Night Main Event, I had my own dressing room. Never asked for it, but all of a sudden I got a dressing room with my dame on it and all this. And I heard Freddie stood up one day with the boys and says, there's only one guy in this whole territory that calls his own shots with Vince, and that's Jesse Ventura. And I can't tell you, you know, having known old grumpy Freddie Blassie, if you ever met him.
But I did.
Freddie, that's the greatest compliment Fred could have ever given me, and he'll always be dear in my heart. More so than managing me was for when he said that there's only one guy that calls his own shots with Vince.
We used to go to the garden, and Freddie would show up. You know, and he's getting on up there, but
yeah.
I always have conversations with him.
Yeah.
God, just the respect. And he had this charisma about him, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you said, for a guy like that to push you over.
Yeah.
And some of the things I've done when a veteran will put you over and say, that was good. It doesn't mean anything about tickets sold. It's if that person has validated what they thought about you.
Yeah, it's for Freddie to say that. That was always made me pride to say, for an old timer to say that.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
Hey, man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
The Steve Austin Show.
The Steve Austin Show.
I read that you never ever signed a contract with WWF, and that you never took a piss test.
Never.
Did everybody else sign a contract?
I guess. I didn't look out for everyone else. We're independent contractors. Vince,
so
is,
to speak.
Wait, Vince.
I know you're gripe
Vince,
on this.
Wait. Vince is lucky I didn't go for the Senate. Because had I gone into the Senate, I would have started a senatorial investigation as to why pro wrestlers are called independent contractors when they're not. You work for one company, they order you around, they control your whole life. How are you possibly an independent contractor except for they don't have to pay your Social Security? That's why.
Right.
And so Vince is lucky that I never got to the Senate because I would have investigated that because to me, look at the thousands of dollars it's cost all of us wrestlers to have to pay 15% or whatever it is as an independent contractor on our taxes. That's a bee that's been under my saddle since I began wrestling. I thought, we are not independent contractors. I can't work for another promoter on Wednesday and then work for you on Friday. It don't work that way. How are we independent contractors?
You brought up the idea of a union way back in the day. What was it, 84?
It was right before WrestleMania 2.
Okay.
Because I left and did Predator and became part of the Screen Actors Guild. And before I signed with Vince, I told him, don't worry about union, Vince. I got mine.
Okay.
If they don't want it, that's their fault.
But when you brought up the idea, like, did you have any design on how it'd be run, what you would try to accomplish?
All I did... It was WrestleMania 2. 2 weeks before it, all the publicity had gone out. The advantage was ours. See, Jesse Ventura studies business. The advantage was ours. I waited so there was no agents around. I stood up in the dressing room, and I gave a speech to the boys. And this was at the time we were still battling Charlotte. And I said, if we go together and simply tell the media we are not wrestling unless union negotiators by federal law come in and give us the opportunity to unionize. I said, guys, the people that turn on the lights in these buildings are union. I said, they have to do it by law. It's in our favor. Then if we engage the Charlotte guys to do the same thing, we can have a union in wrestling. I gave this big speech. I left it there. I went home. The next night, I got a call from Vince, who basically threatened to fire me if I ever brought it up again, and read me the riot act. And I then went and did WrestleMania 2 and immediately left and did Predator and was a member of the Screen Actors Guild now, my union that I get retirement from now, health care from, all of that from. And so when I came back to Vince, I told him point blank, Vince, I won't ever bring up union again. I said, if these guys are too stupid to fight for their rights, I have my union now. I'm a member of the Screen Actors Guild. I get health care. I get retirement. I get everything from them. I'll pay my union dues. You won't hear from me. Well, then when I sued Vince, we had to depose him. And on the way out, I told my lawyer the story. And in deposition, you can bring up anything. And I said, if you can, David, find out who ratted me. I said, find out who ratted me that day, because it was one of the boys, because there were no agents there. Yeah. And so we got in there, Vince, and my attorney was great. He says, Mr. McMahon, he said, has there ever been a union in wrestling? Vince, no. Anyone ever try to form one? Vince sat a minute. He says, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I think Jesse Ventura spouted his mouth off about it once years ago. And my attorney goes, well, how do you know that? Did you hear him? No. Well, how did you know he spouted his mouth? He didn't even hesitate. Hulk Hogan told me. I was sitting in the chair and at a deposition.
You didn't sell it.
Well, at a deposition, you can't talk.
Right.
You got to be. I was there. It was like someone punched me in the face. This was my friend. And I thought, Hogan betrayed me. Hogan called Vince and ratted me. Was an office stooge. In my day, that's what they were called. That was a low life, an office, somebody who reports to the office in the old days. And it stunned me. Stunned me. I sat there in the chair and I couldn't even think that it was Hogan. And then Vince admitted it on Larry King too. And there's no reason for him to lie. He's under sworn oath. And then Hogan continued to lie about it and said he didn't do it. And I've never spoken to him since, and I don't care to, because he sold, in my opinion, Hogan sold me out. And then I found out in the trial why.
Why?
Well, in the trial, we got the records of WrestleMania 3, the big one,
right.
Him and Andre. Well, Hogan made more money than all of us combined, including Andre. If you took the payoffs of Andre and the whole rest of the card, Hogan made more than we did. So naturally, he didn't want a union.
Right.
That could even out the money a little bit more. And when I saw that he made more than Andre and all of us combined, then the picture was crystal clear to me that he sold us out because he was getting taken care of and he didn't want nobody else horning in on the good deal he had.
How was going back in 2009 when you were the general manager for Night of Monday Night Raw? And you got a chance to interact with Vince.
Yep.
A couple of promos, and then you did color on a match.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, y'all clicked right back into the old gear.
For me, I took it as that when they flew me there, I turned to my son, because my son came with me that night, and I turned to him and I said, Ty, I said, please bear with me tonight, but this is an opportunity for one night for me to go back. And be who, and so did you notice I villained it?
Yes.
Everyone was going to cheer me, and I right away turned and went villain. I did that on purpose. I said, I want to be the old Jesse. And so I went there and went against all the baby crap and went total villain. And what it did, it gave me a fleeting moment of enjoyment of what it used to be. It's like anything in life when you leave something and you never do it again. Rarely do you get an opportunity to relive the feeling. And that's what it gave me for that one night to relive the feeling.
But how was it going back, you know, after the lawsuits, after all the BS, you know, and the union?
To me, it was business.
Just business.
Just business. Vince was treating me fine. We were both scratching each other's back. I can't complain about Vince because here's the thing I'm embarrassed over, Steve, and I think you were part of this. The biggest payday I ever received in wrestling was when I refereed the match in Minneapolis. West governor. 99. And what I say, I'm embarrassed over that. As a wrestler, how can I say my biggest payoff was being a referee? I'm a wrestler. Referees, come on. Those are the old washed-up guys or the guys who couldn't wrestle in the first place and want to be in the business. No offense to the referees. Yeah. But here I'm getting the biggest payoff I've ever gotten in my life, and it's because I'm a frickin' ref. You know, that part of it was tough to take. The money was great. You know, it overshadowed it.
I'm glad you brought that up because here's something that happened during that match. And I don't know if you know about this to this day. So I was a part of that match. It was me.
Yeah, six men. Yeah, yeah.
Triple H.
Yeah.
In a triple threat match.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate those kind of matches.
I'd never seen one before, yeah, so it was new to me.
I loved tag team wrestling when I was with Brian.
Sure.
I come to love it. But I was always like a singles guy.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're in this triple threat. And I think Shane McMahon came ringside, and I was standing on the bottom rope, and he came by the ring, and I took a swipe at him. And when I did, that was the first night that I started wearing the double knee braces. I used to wear one,
okay,
but now I was wearing double because the knees were so bad. Well, I tipped over and went upside down, and when I did, I hung myself in the ropes. So I'm hanging upside down by my legs. There's no way I can right myself back up. And so something just happened. Maybe it was something you did with Shane, but all of a sudden you go into a strut and I'm hanging upside down. I can't ask Mick or Triple H to, hey, help me out. I can't get out here.
Sure.
So as you're strutting, I'm hanging upside down going, Jesse, Jesse, Jesse. And you're caught up in the moment. We've got 20,000 people there. I'm hanging upside down on the top baby face in the world, and I'm screwed. And so finally, Triple H and me, who always had such a...
I don't even remember.
I know you didn't. But Triple H, he writes me up, and he had no business doing so because he's a heel.
Sure.
And this is one of those moments every now and then I'll botch a high spot or something with Triple H, who I loved working with. And right away, I had to start punching. I'm like, God dang it, God dang it, God dang it. But I'm using the other word.
Sure.
And we went to a whole high spot. But it was so embarrassing. It was just un-friggin' believable. And I'm like, Jesse, I'm just waiting. Man, you took care of me in 92 and down in WCW. Help me out in 99 to get me back on my feet.
I don't even remember it.
I know.
Yes. I had the enjoyment that night. What I really took pride in, as referee, I actually backed down China. That night.
Really?
Yeah. She backed up from, she sold me. And remember, China wasn't taking crap from nobody then.
She was over strong.
Yeah. She was over big. But I got along well with her. I was really saddened when I learned she died.
I know.
I was really, because, you know, she had a background, but she was very fair to me, and she, I liked her.
I did
really
too.
Enjoyed her. She was a strange woman. You know, but an unbelievably good talent.
She was an absolute sweetheart.
She was a great talent.
We all had our own issues, but a great look. She was overstrong.
And a great talent.
Yeah.
A phenomenal talent.
And had a charisma. You know? But we had this kind of a relationship, just kind of a goofy or silly sense of humor.
Steve, let's get to the book.
Let's talk about
the book.
Wait to segue to it, because I know you got to go.
Yeah.
The Marijuana Manifesto. I'm on chapter 3. Everybody listening to my podcast knows that I'm I have a hard time reading, but the foreword by who's it? Ken Duffy?
Cubby. Steve Cubby.
Steve Cubby. That thing's halfway riveting.
It's an outrage.
It is.
It's an outrage. Let me explain why this is a focus to me now.
I know. It's the seizures, right?
Yeah. I had someone very close to me developed epileptic seizures and was seizing 3 to 4 times a week. Not only was this person's quality of life gone, so was mine.
Right.
Because if you've ever had to deal with a person with seizures, it's hopeless. You're hopeless. You don't know what you can do. You want to do something, and there's nothing you can do to bring them back until the seizure runs its course. And we had gone, our quality of life was gone. The person went to the doctor, got put on four different pharmaceutical medicines, one, the next one, the next. None of them worked. The seizures continued. All the pharmaceuticals had horrible side effects. One was hair falling out. All these horrible side effects. Finally, in desperation, we went to Colorado. And I managed, we got what they call medical marijuana. Three drops under the tongue three times a day. It's now in pill form. One pill in the morning, one pill at night. This person's completely off seizure pharma medicine now, has been seizure free for 2.5 years, and it cured her, this person. And I owe my life, my latter golden years, to marijuana. So I've now made it a focus that I want to see it legal across America before I die. And that's going to be one of my focuses, is to see that happen, because there's other people out there suffering. And the thing that I found in researching this book is we're lied to in history. They've lied to us. When you find out marijuana was the economic backbone of this country for 160 years.
I didn't know that until I read the book.
Exactly. And I like to say this, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, if they lived today, they'd be raided by the DEA. They'd be doing 10 to 12 years in a federal penitentiary as major drug dealers because they raised and sold massive amounts of marijuana. Back then, the only reason cotton replaced it in the South was when they invented the cotton gin. It was marijuana before that. This country, and my other argument, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and Betsy Ross's flag are all made out of marijuana. If that doesn't make it all American, what could?
Right.
And I argue we allow tobacco, we allow alcohol. Why is marijuana? And then you learn why. Because William Randolph Hearst wanted to corner the market, so he paid off the politicians to make it illegal, so we'd have to buy his lumber from lumber and trees, the paper, rather than marijuana. I love to throw this out, too. My friend Willie Nelson, I've been to Willie's home, and Willie's a great guy. He is a phenomenal guy.
Does he actually have a home?
Right in Austin.
Well, he loves to be on the bus.
Well, okay. That's the point I'm getting to. Willie doesn't only smoke pot, which who cares? So did Satchmo. Louis B. Armstrong came out and said he smoked before every time he played. Now, if that gets you Willie Nelson and it gets you Louis B. Armstrong, I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with marijuana. And Willie, not only does he partake in it, which everyone knows about, get this, he runs all his tour buses on biodiesel fuel from marijuana.
Yeah.
So it can power our vehicles. This plant is so remarkable when you learn about it. You think, why have we been eradicating it? And then I love to throw this in, Steve, for all the religious people out there. Okay, then you have to admit God made marijuana because it was here before we were. So if God made it, what right do we have to destroy it? To destroy something God made. And if he made it, then as the stories go, he made it for us to use it. Everything was put on earth for us to use. Why aren't we using it the proper way? And I dedicated the book to my friend Tommy Chong, because people laugh about Cheech and Chong. He made his living at pot. But Tommy's a brilliant guy, if you ever meet him or read his on the internet. And Tommy informed me there should be no difference between what they call medical and recreational, because the people that smoke it for the euphoric feeling are doing it for mental health. They're doing it, and what's wrong with that? I'd rather have someone take a hit of a pot than be on Prozac.
Right.
You know, and so if you smoke it for your mental health, you're not harming anybody. Why? How can in a free country can you commit a crime against yourself?
There's so many arguments, and I'm only at the beginning of the book, but there's so many arguments for and against. In Colorado, it's legal, right?
Well, technically.
Because you can only buy so much.
Yeah.
When see, your argument if it, is you can go and buy as many cigarettes or
as many alcohol as I want, that's when it's legal.
On it.
That's when it's legal.
Right.
When you can walk in and there's no limit. You can buy as much alcohol or cigarettes as you want.
Right. Or cheeseburgers.
Yeah, exactly. So why shouldn't you? Why do they limit you to an ounce of marijuana or a half an ounce is the most a visitor can buy?
Yeah, so I don't understand the argument why that's the way it is.
But the good thing is it's happening state by state. That's the way it's going to be legalized because California is going to vote next this fall, and I fully want them, I expect them to legalize. I hope it happens out here.
I would think in California, just because of California, that's what
well,
it would be.
When in some of the Colorado, all the bad things they told you about it aren't happening.
No, but what about the wrecks?
What?
I mean, what about just driving under the influence? I mean, because if you drink and drive, there's a breath meter, and they can tell you what percentage you're driving at, and there's a 0.10 or a 0.08,
yeah,
depending on what state you're in.
Yeah.
So with respect to marijuana, you know, I've driven.
It's called personal responsibility. You're not supposed to drive under the influence of anything. I could counter Steve and say, I think texting and cell phones are more dangerous.
I would agree.
You know, and people do that on drive out here in L.A. today and take a look at as people drive.
Everybody,
half of them are looking.
I noticed.
Half of them are looking at a cell phone.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me, that's a 2-ton projectile that goes 100 miles an hour that you're in charge of. You ought to be paying attention to what you're doing. It's like I said when I was governor, with freedom comes a price. We all want freedom, but along with freedom comes the yin and the yang of it, the freedom to be stupid. And we have to accept that. And as I used to say, you can't legislate stupidity. People are going to do stupid things. And in the case of, yes, you should not drive under the influence of marijuana, but also the testing's unfair because if they were to test you, you could smoke pot on Saturday, and on Thursday, if you're pulled over, you'll test positive. Well, you're not under the influence of marijuana days later. So they need to find a mechanism that will immediately, are you under the influence while you're driving? But on the flip side, if you are driving on pot, chances are you're going slower. Chances are you're abiding by the laws more so than speeding.
Maybe, but if they were to have that mechanism, do you think that would help the cause?
Maybe, maybe not, because every day in America, there's 300,000 drunk drivers out there. Who doesn't know it's illegal? There's no excuse to drink and drive, and people still do it, don't they?
Correct.
And they're not outlawing alcohol, are they?
But
so that's my point.
Is it Big Pharma?
Oh, that's one of them. Oh, it's Big Pharma. It's the tobacco industry. It's the alcohol industry. None of them want it legal because that all cuts into their profits. If someone, they've already proven one of the major lies. We've always been told that marijuana is a gateway drug to heroin.
Right.
And yet now it's been proven in every state that's legalized marijuana, heroin usage has dropped. It's done the opposite. And when you look today, and Hillary Clinton takes the chicken way out, like all politicians, well, we need more testing. No, we don't.
Yeah.
There's a university in Israel, the Cannabis University. We fund it. The doctor over there knows everything about it. He's already stated it will help post-traumatic stress for soldiers coming home. He stated it will help the head trauma in the NFL.
Yes.
It already, as you saw Steve Cubby, it cures some forms of cancer. It stops you if you're getting chemotherapy. You're able to eat and consume food. It has so many positives to the small amount of negatives that it is ridiculous that this is not available to everybody who needs it or wants it. And it's jobs waiting to happen, Steve. How many people work in the tobacco industry? How many people work in the alcohol industry? How many jobs are waiting? The state of Washington, you know what their first windfall was when they legalized? And I can tell you as a governor, this is mammoth. They saw a 15% drop in their statewide judicial budget. 15%. You're talking hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
Out of your judicial budget, as taxpayers, you don't have to pay for that. People need to understand every time a person gets arrested for anything, that costs you money. It costs you taxes right. to arrest anybody for anything. Well, why are we arresting people for committing crimes against themselves in a free country?
God damn it, it's an argument.
There is no argument. Why would it be illegal when George Washington and Thomas Jefferson used it? Excuse me. They were smoking pot and they wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. You know, I find those two documents pretty damn good. And get this, Washington even knew in his diary, he knew about cross-pollination. He talked one year, he was angry because he let his hemp cross-pollinate. He lost his female and male yeah. plants. So they obviously knew about the euphoric feeling too.
Yes.
And what's wrong with it? Like I've told people, if I went to a party and was offered a party yeah. to go to a drinking party or a pot party,
yeah.
I'd take the pot party. The chances of violence are slim to none. With drinking, it's 50-50. Nobody's going to throw up on me. And you can smoke pot till 3 in the morning and get up and go to work and function. Drinking, you drink till 3 o'clock, get up at 7, you ain't going to work.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
Hey, man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com. Question. It's taken you about a year to put the research together, you and your
at least
publisher, and with
Jen.
Skyhorse with Jen
yeah.
to put this book together.
40 pages of notes.
Talk about, just for a second, I know you got to leave, but you're talking about with Skyhorse Publishing, you and your partner there. He's going to get a lot of heat for putting this book out. No one
Tony Lyons?
Yeah, Tony Lyons. Because you said...
Tony don't care. That's
I know,
what's
but
great
that's
about
the thing
Tony.
About it. He'll take the heat. What kind of heat comes from a book like this?
From the status quo? From heat from the government. The federal government doesn't want it legal. They make money off keeping it illegal.
Correct.
And so, and not only that, but if the feds come out now and legalize it, then don't they have to let everybody out of prison that's in there for
right.
pot? Wouldn't you think if they, see, that's why they won't legalize, because they now have corporate-run prisons, and in a corporate-run prison, you have to have it full so the corporation can turn profit to the stockholders. So it's imperative to keep pot smokers in jail so that the corporate-run prisons can make money for the private corporations. But Obama's come out and said he's going to end that. Great.
Okay.
Great.
In the Atlantic, you did an interview with those guys July 25th, 2016. You say you're paying a price for writing some of the books that you've written. You can't get hired in the United States. You're blackballed here.
Yep.
So
well, mainly I'm blackballed over the Chris Kyle thing.
Okay. The Chris Kyle thing.
Yeah, because okay. He lied.
We know the story.
Yep.
But, I mean, so how does that make you feel? I mean, you're still
well,
in Minnesota, but you're here in L.A. You're making rounds.
Well,
how do people take you?
Well,
I love you to death.
I know, and you do, and some do, but as the person in the room can testify, when I was out in New York, I got read off in the lobby of a hotel over the
really?
Chris Kyle thing. And this was this was September the 11th of 2016.
All you're doing is standing up for your story.
Well, but all I did was he lied about me.
Right.
And I went to court and proved it. But see, now I'm a target.
You're
because,
the bad guy?
Yeah, because the Court of Appeals overturned the jury. They broke a 76-year rule. And they broke a second rule that they ruled the opposite 3 days later on in a different case.
Y'all going back to court?
Yeah. I have to retry the whole case. They've ordered
That's
a new
ridiculous.
Trial. Yes, it is.
Hey,
but I'm a target.
Chris Kyle did as a sniper for our country, but in this, I don't know why you're the villain.
Well, I don't know why either, because all I did was stand up for a lie. He lied about me.
You can't stand up for yourself.
And he lied about
yeah.
me. And he lied about a lot of other things. The latest, they caught him, he lied about his medals. The Navy had to come out and make the correction.
Will you get any heat off the marijuana manifesto?
Sure. I probably will. The DEA, I don't speak very highly. I want them disbanded. I feel that the Drug Enforcement Agency, they're as bad as the cartels. There's cases they break into homes, shoot and kill people, and then find out they got the wrong address.
Right.
And nobody goes to jail for it. Nobody's held accountable. I guess it's a real war. Civilians always die as collateral damage in war.
Is there another book up your sleeve?
There will be, I think, one more. One more. I won't talk about it now, but you have to be motivated to write on something, and I'll be writing one more book that probably won't be popular. I don't know.
Okay.
But I have to do it.
Then
I'll tell you what it is. It's going to be a book on my trial.
Really?
Yeah. I want the public to see the transcripts of the trial and see what this Court of Appeals did. And all this because I think the public needs to know that when you're a person like me who stands up as an individual, that you can get targeted by them. I don't know how you feel about Mr. Snowden, but to me, he's a hero.
Right.
Because he exposed the government for violating the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, and yet he's treated like a criminal, and if he comes home, he'll be arrested and put in prison. Well, do you know who John Carreyrou is?
No.
Oh, you need to have him on. He's a former CIA agent who refused to take torture training to torture people. He's the one that exposed the torture in Iraq. Guess who went to jail? He did. The guy who refused to torture and who would and exposed that we were committing war crimes, torturing people, he ended up 2 years in prison, can't get a job today, and they've literally destroyed him because he told the truth about us committing a war crime. And I'm not at the level of John, but I still feel I'm a target like him.
You're about to head out the door.
And I've signed a new contract. You know, well, people didn't realize 34 major media conglomerates came into my trial in the appeals to have it overturned. Every major media in America wanted my verdict overturned, and they did it. They used their influence on these two judges, Riley and Shepard, and they plus here's what they violated. In a court case, if you're going to object to final argument, if something's said in final argument, you must object in front of the jury so that the judge has a chance to rule and the jury has a chance to hear it. They never objected. The jury left at 11:58. At 12:02, they objected, and the judge overruled them. The two judges then overturned the case over something that was never objected to during the case, which broke a 76-year rule. Then they overturned a Minnesota law called unjust enrichment. They now say that can't apply. Well, the rules to the appeals court state you can only argue the theory that was argued in the trial. Well, the media came in and argued a new theory, and they accepted it. 3 days later on another case, they ruled directly the opposite way.
Mm.
And I'll state this. It even came out, I've heard from other judges have said clearly Jesse Ventura, they're out to get him.
How about if I finish the book? Are they going to go? Are you going to go back to Mexico when you get done making your media rounds?
No. In fact, I'll tell you what I'm doing. Being that I'm blackballed in the U.S. media and no one will allow me, I took a job with on the internet with where the company's owned by Carlos Slim, the Mexican. Well, that did a year and a half, and that didn't quite work out because of other things. But during that time, my show was picked up by Russian television.
I read that.
And I've now signed a 2-year contract with Russian television. I will be on there with Russian TV the night of the election. And people call Russian TV a propaganda tool by the Russian government. That's a lie. Yes, we're financed by Russia, but so is PBS financed by our government here, PBS.
Right.
Plus, we don't have no advertising, so Big Pharma can't control me or no advertiser will control me. They flew me to Russia in December. I met Putin, and I've been assured I will never be censored in any way, shape, or form. I can say what I feel, and they've done it so far. I have to believe them. But isn't it ironic, Steve, that I, as a Vietnam vet and lived through the Cold War, it's now the Russians giving me my free speech and not my own country?
Will you film that here? And it-
It's RT America. It's so powerful. My show will be seen by 800 million homes throughout the world. It's second only to the BBC on world coverage. It's just that Russian TV's censored here. It's hard to get it
so
in the United States. As soon as I get back from this. As soon as I'm through.
How busy do you
and as soon as the election's over. I want to be busy when I'm in the States, but see, I've got a deal set up with them where I'll do 8 shows, then I'll go to Mexico for the winter and then come back and and do shows again.
So it's not 24/7, you're talking 8 shows.
It's more shows than that, but it's 8 in a block, and they've bent over backwards for me. I do them right in Minnesota.
But it's things that you're passionate about?
Anything I want to talk about.
Yeah, you just decide it.
Okay. Yeah, and we're going to talk about all those controversial things like medical marijuana, like torture. Like, I heard Putin interviewed the other day, and the BBC guy was getting on him about Russian aggression. And President Putin said, well, let's put it into common sense terms. We, Russia, we have 2 military bases outside of Russia. He goes, the United States has 174. Who's the aggressor?
Yeah.
Well, I sit back and go, gee, when you 174 to 2, I'd say we're the aggressor out in the world. See, the United States, we're living with blinders on. Did you know, Steve, that there was a poll taken 3 years ago by Gallup? 3,000 people internationally, no U.S. people. One of the questions was, if your country were to go to war, who would it be likely be against? 23% answered the United States. 8% answered China. 6% answered Pakistan. 1 out of 4 people internationally think if they go to war, it'll be with the U.S. As a veteran, I hang my head in shame over that. That's how we're looked at now. We're the war country. We're the country that everyone fears will go to war against. I want to change that. And, you know, working for the Russians, here I'll have some fun with you. Why aren't, after all these years, they should be our friend? Shouldn't they, after all, you know, finally?
I'm just wondering where the heat's at.
Wait, and here, yeah, me too. Why? But here's my kicker thing. Well, we should be friends with Russia. After all, they're white. You know, this isn't Mexico we're talking about here, brown-skinned people we want to build walls to defend. These are white people, and I do that tongue-in-cheek
so people know,
but I do laugh about it and think, gee, they're white people. Why wouldn't we want to be friends with them, you know? But, and here's the other reason I want to do it, Steve. My father fought in World War II, 6 bronze battle stars, North Africa, Normandy, Battle of the Bulge, Anzio, Berlin, Remagen Bridge, and he didn't talk much about the war, but he did tell me about Berlin, the friendships he made with the Russians when they got there. And I could never figure out how they became our enemy before the war was even over. They did. Well, it's because Wall Street ran us, and who's Wall Street afraid of? Socialism. That's how come they became our immediate enemy. Well, with my father in mind, I'm 65 now. I want to do anything I can to make us and Russia friends. And if it means a little part is working on Russian television to show both sides, we can do it. That's what I'm going to do now. That and get marijuana made legal. Those are the two things that I'm focusing on now in my golden years, as they call it.
More conspiracy theories coming?
No. I got in so much trouble for that. I got read off on the floor of Congress. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I got read off on the floor of Congress when we did the show about the FEMA camps.
When you say read off, what does that mean?
That means a congressman got up on the floor and read officially into the record what a horrible person I was for exposing that they ordered FEMA to build these camps around the U.S., and we took photos of them. They look identical to the German camps. They got spurs coming up. We went to one. Barbed wire fences. And do you know how to read barbed wire?
I don't.
You're going to learn. Barbed wire. If it's straight up and down, it's neutral. If it slants this way, it's to keep you in. If it slants that way, it's to keep people out from getting in. Okay. All these FEMA camps, it slants in. It's to keep you in.
Right.
And in the back of one was all these toys for kids to play on. And I approached them in the show. I said, "You've had children here? We don't answer anything. You have to talk to Homeland Security." "Well, why would you have toys, jungle gyms, and what, for adults? You know, you put kids in here? For what purpose?" I got read off on the floor of Congress for that. When we went, did Plum Island, where as we circled the island, the Coast Guard fell in and put us under observation right behind us the whole time. We had two vehicles on shore piggybacking. I guess they thought as a frogman I might swim in. I didn't want no part of that island. You know, that's where they do the biological warfare, where we turned it over to a Nazi to do it. We found the history of it. The guy's a Nazi that ran Plum Island. That's where, disease came from? Lyme disease, because it's named after Lyme, Connecticut, which is right across the water from Plum Island, where they do these experiments. And this guy, what was his name now? I can't think of it. He was the head Nazi for biological warfare, and we gave him his own laboratory on Plum Island, the United States. This guy should have stood trial at Nuremberg.
Lyme disease?
It was created at Plum Island.
I thought it was from ticks.
It is. That's what they experiment on, ticks and mosquitoes for biological warfare. You infect the mosquitoes and ticks and then turn them loose.
Are you kidding me?
Would I kid about what we do for war? Steve, I want you to think about this a minute. Chemical warfare is illegal, right?
Right.
They can't use tear gas in war, right?
Right.
Yet we can use it on our own people to break up a demonstration. So we use on our own people chemicals that we are not allowed to use against an enemy. Does that make sense? That we would use on our own people?
Jen's giving us a go-home cue. We're signing off. Damn, Jesse, it's been a pleasure having you here at the house.
Steve, it was my pleasure to come here to renew our friendship. And I'll state this. When I did that short gig at WCW, I knew then they didn't know what the hell they were doing with you. And when you got up to Vince, Vince knew what to do with you. No, I saw you as a talent waiting to happen. You just needed the right people to make it happen, and you found them.
I did. Yep. Thanks for coming by.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us for another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends. For more Steve Austin Show, go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
I'm Martin Cove,
Sensei John Kreese from the Cobra Kai TV series and the Karate Kid trilogy. And I'm hosting a new podcast, Cobra Cove, with my own kids, Rachel and Jesse Cove.
We're breaking down Cobra Kai episodes and talking about everything from pop culture to bullying and personal development.
With all kinds of great guests from the TV series, Hollywood, and the mental health world.
Listen to Cobra Cove now at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast One.
Do you have a problem with that?
No, sensei!
I mean, Dad.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy, Big Brother Jake, a.k.a. Jake Warner.
My government name.
Check it out. I host a show called the Big Brother Jake Podcast, and I've taken my talents to the biggest and baddest platform on the planet. That's right, baby, Podcast One. My show is unique as I talk about everything. Life, sports, entertainment, being a single dad juggling several jobs. I'm a hot mess. But it's damn entertaining. Subscribe and review now on Apple Podcasts and listen on Podcast One or wherever you get your podcasts.